Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Mother's Day is over for this year. Some people really look forward to those chocolates and flowers, and others... Well, David Beach wrote an essay about his feelings. The title? Just Don't Call Me Mom. Gideon Glick, who most recently appeared in the Broadway play Significant Other, reads us David's essay.
To celebrate our daughter coming into our lives, my husband and I decided to host a party where Sadie would be blessed by a Catholic priest and be given a Hebrew name by a rabbi. We had the priest from my side of the family. Now, we needed a rabbi. Russell was barely even culturally Jewish and had just started his own consulting business, meaning he had no extra time for anything. So finding a rabbi fell to me. Many I contacted refused to officiate with a Catholic priest. Others asked about the mother. Is she Jewish? They wanted to make it clear that Sadie would not be considered Jewish unless the mother was, even if we gave her a Hebrew name. Sadie has two fathers. Most people get it when I say she has two daddies. Others persist, asking, no, but who is her mom? With the rabbis, I finally just said, I'm her mom. This response has silenced women in elevators, nannies on playgrounds, and bureaucratic clerks in charge of postponing jury duty. I didn't realize that saying those three words would, in some people's eyes, transform me from a married man into June Cleaver. I just thought, if hanging out with a beautiful baby while someone else earns the money is mom-like, then sign me up. Unfortunately, I failed to read the small print explaining that my handsome husband may start seeing me as June Cleaver, too. As a former Catholic, I come from a long line of passive-aggressive mothers. My own Catholic mother, who lives one floor below us, reminds me of it daily. If you really want to get me something nice for my birthday, she'll say, I could use a few tubs of Benecol. When she saw me in a Broadway show where I appeared briefly in spandex, she said, it might be fun for us to go on a diet together. Mother's Day is the worst. She invariably turns down my sibling's invitation for brunch in the suburbs, preferring to complain to neighbors in our building's elevator that none of her children invited her anywhere. Russell was on a consulting trip for my first Mother's Day as a mom, where he was enduring the hardships of luxury hotels in Istanbul and London and emphasizing how grueling it was to eat with clients at world-class restaurants, as I dined on Sadie's leftover pureed spinach and pears. A 9-month-old is expensive, and since I wasn't earning any money, I was determined to spend as little as possible. I planned on showering my mother with the extravagance of a card I would make myself. Early that fateful Sunday morning, after a whopping 3 hours of sleep, I was making my mother's card when our doorman buzzed. Loud noises made Sadie cry, so our buzzer, similar to the sound of someone being electrocuted, caused her to scream and me to use language that wasn't child-friendly. Over the screaming, I heard that I had a package downstairs. I assumed it was our shipment of formula from diapers.com. Thanks, Junior, I said. I'll be down in a bit. I feared my outfit of boxer shorts and spit-up-encrusted t-shirt was too casual for a full-service lobby. I'd returned to my card-making when my phone rang. My mother. Happy Mother's Day, I said. Thank you, she said. You have a package downstairs. I know. I'll get it later. She'd clearly been making the rounds in the building, moaning about her ungrateful children, so the pressure was on to make her card so special that it would equal a fancy brunch and bouquet of flowers. As Sadie and I headed down to 11B to deliver it, our neighbor said, "You have a package downstairs." "Thanks," I said, nostalgic for brownstone living and anonymous deliveries. My mother opened the door and I handed her the card, which she pretended to appreciate. "Oh, David, this is lovely," she said. "Why don't you go down and get your package?" As I headed to the elevator, leaving Sadie with my mother, yet another neighbor said, "You have a package downstairs." I started to wonder where the line is between a full-service building and a full-annoyance one. When exiting our elevator into the lobby, you make a hairpin turn past the shiny brass mailboxes before seeing the doorman at his perch. If I were directing a movie, this sequence would involve a slow pan of me turning the corner with a jump cut to a close-up of my face as I saw what awaited me. It was not a package. It was not a shipment from diapers.com. On the doorman's stand was a flower arrangement topped by a clump of Mylar balloons. Stapled to the cellophane, a big card yelled, "Happy Mother's Day, David!" Time stood still. I felt as if I were in a vacuum with no sound, movement, or feelings. Somehow, I managed to grab the thing and rush it into the elevator. I think I heard Junior call out, "Happy Mother's Day, David," in a non-mocking way. But, as in a Bugs Bunny cartoon, there was a factory whistle blaring and steam coming out of my ears, so I couldn't really hear him. In the elevator, I assessed what I was holding. This was no gaudy embarrassment of pink carnations and baby's breath. If it's possible for a melange of balloons and flowers to be tasteful, this was it. And if my almost 3 decades with Russell has taught me anything, it's that the difference between tacky and tasteful is usually the difference between a little money and a lot. Even so, the more my eyes focused on this expensive riot of mini green hydrangea and garden roses, the more I wanted, instead, a bottle of single malt scotch, a therapeutic massage, and someone to look after Sadie for 5 hours. As the elevator ascended, the full weight of the package became almost unbearable. I felt, more than ever before, the crushing burden of motherhood. We moms may feel closer to the source of all power that exists in the universe, but we are forced to endure the condescension of a society that acknowledges our role with pink balloons. I envisioned my allegedly hardworking hubby lounging in his London hotel room, suddenly remembering that it was almost Mother's Day and making a panicked transatlantic call to the pricey florist he has on speed dial. While trying to figure out which arrangement would most impress his mother, he probably thought, "Wait, I have 2 mothers to think about now. Make it a double." The possibility that Russell had merged me in his mind with his own mother hit me so hard that I almost dropped the heavy bouquet on the floor. I briefly thought about getting off on 11 and presenting it to my mother. I also considered going directly into the trash room and stomping on it until it was unrecognizable, until I realized that the shattering of glass and explosion of balloons would only call more attention to my wretchedness. That's when I decided to do what so many moms do every day. Suffer in silence. I stowed the humiliating package in my apartment and went back to my mother's to get Sadie. As I entered, I could tell that even my mother sensed it would be a bad idea to mention Russell's gift. She again thanked me for my card and asked if we were going out for brunch. "Mom, Mother's Day brunch in New York City is like a combination of jury duty, the DMV, and the No. 6 train platform at rush hour." "So, no?" "No, Mom, another time. One of the best things about being a new parent is having the license to sleep when your baby does. So even though I'd been up for only an hour, I stretched out with Sadie, and her sleeping breath against my chest gave me a moment to strategize. Why was I so upset? Didn't I have a great life? Wasn't I the first to call myself mom? Why should I be so offended if others follow suit? My father once gave me two pieces of advice. Marry a nice Catholic girl, and always be sure to look and overlook. Look and overlook is one of those pithy phrases that makes sense one moment and baffles the next. As I stared at the balloons, however, those words gave me much-needed clarity. I needed to overlook how much I felt like a stay-at-home loser and look a little more closely at the actual message on the card attached to the floral elephant in the room. So, I ripped open the envelope. It read, "Dear Daddy David, just as we've decided that our daughter should celebrate both Hanukkah and Christmas, there's no reason we can't co-opt every holiday celebrating parenthood. Thanks for being the best parent in the world and making Sadie and me feel so lucky. Love you tons, Daddy Russell. P.S. Because I know you're wondering, I sent a different and much smaller arrangement to my mom. Best Mother's Day ever."
¿Por qué no me besas así, así? Que ya tengo sed de tu dulce sabor.
Gideon Glick, reading David Beach's essay, "Just Don't Call Me Mom."
El deseo de un gran beso de amor. El amor sin besos no es para mí. ¿Tú crees que me puedes engañar?
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. David Beach still lives in Manhattan with his husband, Russell, and their now 8-year-old daughter, Sadie. The studios were a quick walk from their apartment.
On my way here, that's what I should have said about my walk here. I said hi to Junior, the doorman who's in the story. And then when I went through the doors out into the street, then I said hi to my mom, who was sitting outside on a folding chair. She guards the sidewalk. He guards the lobby.
Having his mother close has given David, and Russell and Sadie, the opportunity to spend quality time together. But David says he continues to be baffled by society's preoccupation with gender-specific parent roles.
When I talked to friends of mine who are mothers, and they said, "Oh, my husband babysat the other night." And I always think, "Wait, wasn't he parenting the other night? I mean, that wasn't babysitting."
And what about Sadie? What does she say about having two dads?
She's never defensive. When people say, "Oh, what a pretty dress, did your mom pick that up for you?" She'll say, "Oh, I have two dads." And there was a time at school, I think, where we were told that she called a class meeting to figure out why some kids still ask her why she didn't have a mom. And so she led the meeting. I think she was 6 at the time. And she asked for an explanation from everyone what they thought the big difference was between having a mom and a dad and a dad and a dad. And finally someone said, "Nothing." And then she said, "Right, so why do people keep on asking me that question?"
David and Russell will celebrate their 30th anniversary next March. David says they've witnessed decades of political and cultural change for same-sex couples, and he's grateful that his family is not so unique anymore. He's also dazzled by his little girl on a daily basis.
She is, I'm not objective, but we have the most beautiful child, and she corrects us and says, please don't call me beautiful, except I know you're talking about beautiful on the inside, but other people might not. She's so much more advanced than I am. One time I said to her, why do you think we love you so much? I think she was like 5, and I keep it on a post-it in our kitchen, and she said, 1, kindness. 2, smartness. 3, strongness. 4, works hardness. And 5, funny. And I was like, okay, we're good.
Broadway actor David Beach on his precocious daughter, Sadie. He lives with Sadie and his husband, Russell, in New York. In a moment, we'll hear from Daniel Jones.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Daniel Jones is editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times. He loved David Beach's essay because it spoke to a universal truth about long-term couples and parenting, gay or straight.
I see over and over in essays where gay couples are trying to sort of, break out of these roles. They get married or they're in long-term relationships and they try to sort of dispense with the old, but often find themselves falling into those patterns anyway. And usually it's some sort of power dynamic. One person is making more money and one person pulls back and becomes the caregiver to children. And it doesn't matter if you're in a gay or straight relationship, that creates a power imbalance that people just, it causes conflict whoever you are.
Thanks again to Gideon Glick for reading this week's essay. Gideon's in his 20s, so not quite yet at the parenting stage, but this piece still gave him a lot to think about.
I loved how the author of this essay was two sides of one coin, where he kind of relished being the mother, and then also it became a symbol for all these things he hates about himself and his life. And I like how beautifully those two kind of coexist in this essay.
Next week on Modern Love, actress Minnie Driver.
Willem's first operation lasted 4 hours. After, the surgeon came out. I stood before him, waiting to hear our destiny. We got most of it out, he said. I hugged myself. When is he going to die? 1 year, maybe 2. Very few people ask that question.
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, and Amory Sievertson. Extra help this week from producer Catherine Brewer. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.